Welcome, everyone, to the Take Control of Your Health podcast. This is Dr. Mercola bringing you the latest cutting-edge interviews to help you achieve optimal health. You can receive more information by subscribing to my free daily newsletter at mercola.com. Thank you so much for listening. So let's get started with this week's latest program to help you and your family take control of your health. Welcome, everyone. Dr. Mercola helping you take control of your health. And today we are joined by a repeat guest, Sally Norton, who is the maven of oxalates. She is the expert. And if you need to know anything about it, you'd be foolish not to consult with her material first, because that would be the most efficient way to get up to speed on this. So welcome and thank you for joining us today.
Thank you. It's lovely to be with you again.
Yeah, and you've got a new book out, which I haven't received yet, but it's coming. And this is the, you can show it. There you go. This is the companion book. This is the book everyone's been waiting for, because the problem with oxalates is that you really can't trust or rely on most of the data sources. So you need someone expert to vet them and spend painstaking years going through the data and compiling an accurate list. So thank you for doing that. Yes.
Absolutely. It is a labor.
Yeah, for sure. And it didn't exist. I mean, you had to piece it together. You kind of had it in your head, but, you know, and you would tell people when they asked questions, but we needed a definitive resource. And sadly, that's the state of the union as it is today with respect to oxalates and many other food nutrients too. They're just your degree is in nutrition, isn't it?
Yes.
Dietary sciences?
Yeah, some sort. Human nutrition, right.
Yeah, human nutrition. So you have a BS or MS from Cornell?
Yeah.
Early? Mm-hmm. From Cornell, okay. So you're quite familiar with the field, and you know that many nutrients suffer similar consequences. Some of the data hasn't been updated for 50 years or longer, and
absolutely.
It's questionable.
Absolutely. They've lost complete interest in it.
Yeah. So actually, I'm going to head up a project to solve that. We'll probably, I'm developing a number of new entities. One of them is Mercola Labs, and we'll probably run the test to figure that out and publish it and, you know, update the data systems. Why not? Because that's what we do.
There's a lot of work to be done. And even just with the oxalates, it's huge.
Yeah. So it's been a while. It's been over a year since we last connected, I think maybe two.
Yeah, year and a quarter at least.
Okay, year to two. Yeah, it's at least a year.
Yeah.
So there's been a lot of changes in my personal understanding of human biology, and I'm really interested to dive deep on it because I think, first of all, I want to acknowledge that there's no question. I've had a lot of updates since our last time, but there's not a doubt in my mind that oxalates is a big issue that isn't appreciated by most people, certainly most health professionals. And as I said, you're the maven, and you've got the work. And I can put a link to our previous interview because I want to go over old stuff, but I want to go over some of the new stuff, and we can highlight some of those things too. But the new understanding I've developed or evolved into is, and I definitely mentioned this is the primary catalyst for this conversation because I wanted to discuss it with you. We thought we would capture it for everyone, you know, to have this evolution of occurring. So I think we're both in agreement that most people are not metabolically flexible. They've lost the ability to maximally produce cellular energy in the form of ATP because of a variety of problems. And I have a better understanding of why I think that is. And it's not because they just are eating too many carbs. That is for sure. That is not the reason. There's far more. It's usually, I believe it's related primarily to three things. One is the most pervasive metabolic toxin in our diet, which is linoleic acid. Mm-hmm. Destroys cellular energy production. Following close behind is estrogen. And following behind that is endotoxin. So those are the three culprits. So let's stop there. Do you have any response to that?
Well, I certainly agree that cell membranes and our hormonal state are a mess. Mm-hmm. And I don't know how universal the endotoxin issue really is. I haven't had the ability to be that focused on other things because we're trying to figure out this whole revolution that is the understanding of oxalates being so toxic, being such an interferer with metabolism. Oxalate is another big one that's messing up mitochondrial health, your ability to generate energy.
It's intimately related to endotoxin in an indirect way, which I'll explain in a moment. At least I believe it is. And it's paired. And if you don't understand those two, you're not going to be able to navigate through to get to home. Because, well, let me state this. I have suffered with an oxalate rash, and I didn't know it was an oxalate rash until a few years ago. And I had it for 15 years. It was driving me nuts. It was so intensively itchy that it would make me up in the middle of the night. They would last for months unless I aborted the scratching phase, which was hard to do because they were so intensely paretic or itchy that you couldn't do. I mean, I would wake me up out of a sound sleep. That's how bad the itching was. I mean, almost would drive you, some people, to suicide. It was so intense.
And worse overnight.
Yeah, I guess it did. You know, it's hard to. I've evolved into a place where I was able to identify a powerful symptomatic remedy, which probably has some other therapeutic benefits on my microbiome, which is aloe. And I have a yard of 1,000 aloe plants. So I have an unlimited supply, essentially a lifetime supply. And I can grab fresh aloe and do it. And that would definitely.
Did you ever try topical calcium on it?
I never did. No.
Amazing. Calcium citrate with a little bit of.
How come you never told me that?
You didn't ask.
Oh, man.
It's amazing. In 90% of cases, you can cut that itch and resolve.
It makes perfect sense.
Old remedy from the 1900s.
You can actually precipitate out the oxalates that way. It makes perfect sense.
Interference with electrolytes and calcium is a major toxic effect. And as the immune system is trying to deal with those oxalates in the subdermis and so on, you're getting additional electrolyte disturbances. And there's more to, I don't really know the mechanism of why that calcium topically is so powerful, but it's amazing.
We just shared it. It binds the oxalates.
Than oxalates. It's any skin injury.
Oh, really?
Any skin injury, you know, people who are doing hair removal or whatever, damaging their skin, that putting that calcium on top of it, it just heals like overnight.
That's good. That's a good clue. That's a definitely good clue.
I would love to know more about why that works so well.
When I first started clinical medicine, calcium was a hot topic, and there was a big thrust. This was in the 80s, which you may recall, of pushing people, because we're similar ages, I think.
Yeah.
We're close.
A little younger.
Yeah, a little, but similar. There was a osteoporosis and everyone was on calcium, and I think it was overdone.
I was on a project at Cornell calling up people in a research study to find out how much dairy products they were eating.
Yeah. And dairy is the best source of calcium, I believe.
Yeah. Well, and traditionally a lot of calcium just came from water. Natural water is loaded with
hard water, but were people able to absorb significant quantities?
Yeah. The research suggests that mineral water is a very bioavailable source of calcium.
Okay.
And I think that was human's traditional source.
Yeah, would make sense.
Mm-hmm.
So then there was a pushback, and there were some individuals, and the pendulum swung in the other direction, and there was a war against calcium, and excess calcium was the devil. I think largely precipitated by the fact that calcium is precipitated out in these atherosclerotic plaques, and it's just an innocent bystander, very similar to the way glucose is, or even insulin.
A victim of the whole problem.
Basically. Yeah.
Interestingly, you can see it in the primary hyperoxaluria literature where high oxalate levels turn fascia and other connective tissues into calcified sheets. You can see it in the x-rays in these kids that end up dying of oxalate poisoning, that just because the body is high oxalate, that causes calcification in tissues.
Yeah. Now, I had kidney issues, damage, renal insufficiency, more precisely, as a result of mercury exposure from some improperly removed amalgams in 1995. And so that made my kidneys susceptible. And I had to be really careful with protein intake. And then I realized, but I wasn't taking extra calcium, certainly not as a supplement or in food. I had a dairy, maybe, especially recently, a cup of raw goat's milk a day. But that still wasn't a lot of dairy. And then I started eating cheese, which is a lot of calcium and a lot of protein too. And the interesting thing about cheese is a dairy source of calcium. It's like milk. It's high in calcium, but it also has phosphorus in it. But the phosphorus is relatively low. It's a 2-to-1 ratio. And it turns out, I didn't realize this until I started, because I noticed pretty dramatic improvement when I added the cheese in. But it was a special cheese. The reason I had avoided it before is, and this is not related to oxalates, but it kind of goes into it. We've got some time to discuss it. The reason I avoided it, because I noticed anytime I had cheese, my kidney function would deteriorate quite dramatically. Mm. And then I have a new favorite mentor, collaborator in energetic medicine, and especially Ray Peet's principles, Ashley Armstrong. And she helped me understand that. And you would probably know this because you're really bright, that most cheese should not be eaten. Like maybe 95% of the cheese in the country. Do you believe that?
Well, let me finish. Definitely on the American market. Yes.
Okay. But, and why is that? Why is that? Why do I say that astounding statement?
Why is the cheese unfit to eat?
Yes. One reason.
Do you tell me?
The enzyme they're using.
Yeah, right. It's
They're not GMO. Using animal rennet.
Yeah, they're not.
Yeah. And you knew it, but most people, I didn't know it.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I want to say this in a lot of different interviews I do to reemphasize that fact that you should not be purchasing or consuming cheese unless you see the label and it says animal rennet. Stay away from it.
How things are produced is so important. The food preparation, the traditional food preparation works well. And all the shortcuts of modern,
bad news.
Manufacturing has really destroyed food.
It did. It has. There's no question. So then Ashley helped me understand that. And she has a company, Nourish, I think it is, that sells these things. So she sent me some, and I overdosed and I had like a pound a day for a while.
Cheese is pretty addictive.
It is. I just went crazy. And especially since it ostensibly wouldn't harm my kids. And by creatinine, it was 1.4, and it dropped to 1.2 by radically increasing my protein intake and cheese. So it was like a miracle.
Increase your calcium intake, and it
binds to phosphorus, and phosphorus is a deadly kidney.
It encourages oxalate clearing, depending on how much oxalate is already in the diet. Once you're low oxalate, adding more calcium can increase the mobilization of oxalate.
Absolutely. No question. Yeah. So kind of a refinement of some of the, cause I don't think we last talked since I've been embracing Ray Peet's work, but he triggered me. I mean, because one of your strategies to bind oxalates is the citrates. And chemically, well, there's no question.
Citrates are dissolving oxalates. I mean, dissolving oxalates are also alkalizing, because this whole process of the immune activation from the oxalates.
But you actually, as I recall, don't consume the citrate directly as a supplement. You take a lemon, I believe.
I used to. My system is pretty intolerant to things these days, and I'm sort of allergic to the fruits.
Okay. All right. Well, that's fine. But you were recommending.
Lemon juice. It's amazingly powerful. I get tremendous results with my clients.
Yeah. And it's more natural. The problem with the citrate molecule, like magnesium, potassium, calcium.
Yeah. It's manufactured citrate.
And there's problems with the citrate molecule. There's some toxicity to it that's not fully appreciated. So I avoid them. I think it's not a wise idea to take that as a supplement. I used to, but
I'm
not
using them myself, but sometimes they're just amazingly.
Yeah. And it's like a drug, of course. It's not that dangerous short term, but it's not something you want to consider long term, I think. It's probably unwise. But, it's safer than a lot of drugs, that's for sure. For darn sure.
That's important for people to understand, not to be so paranoid about everything that they're over.
Yes.
Wringing our hands, and we don't need to create more paranoia and unhappiness.
I agree. So let's diverge into, I think you shared it in your previous book, but this is something I became aware of through another podcast I was watching with Chris Masterjohn and I think Dave Asprey, if not with someone else. And Chris shared an interesting fact about oxalates. It's dicarboxylic acid, which you know. And what is that molecule?
Two carbon dioxides.
That's it. That's all it is. Two carbon dioxides. And carbon dioxide is one of the most useful molecules to human biology. Absolutely. Unequivocally, it is. So you have to think, how on God's living earth would combining two carbon dioxide molecules be damaging to human biology? That's the question.
It's incredibly damaging.
No dispute. But the question is why?
It's a small molecule.
It should not
be. But that's not how the plants make it. That's actually not how it's made in nature.
Okay, but it's still the same thing. It's
the end product. And plants make vitamin C principally. And they have other ways of doing it too. But principally, they make ascorbic acid and turn that into oxalic acid.
Right, right. Yeah. But you wind up with these oxalates that... The puzzle as I perceive it, and I think I've got the answer. This is why I'm so excited to connect with you, because there's no better qualified person on the planet, I think, than you to discuss this. And I didn't want to do it on a phone call. I wanted to do it so everyone could capture it and learn from it. And as I'm learning, you know, because I think it's correct, but I wanted to validate it with you. Because in theory, it should not damage biology, but it does, no question. And I believe, let's get back to this metabolic flexibility. I'm basing my information on the NHANES data, was published in 2018 or 2018 data, I believe, was published in 2022 or three, but it was already 4 years old. And that data showed 93.1% of the population was metabolically inflexible.
93 point something?
0.1%.
Even NHANES data shows that?
But and the NHANES data was from 2018. It was in the NHANES data before that was like 89%. So it had gone up 4%.
That's
in
remarkable.
Like a few years. So the data now is 5 years old. And my guess is it's probably between 96 and 97%.
This is adults, right?
I believe that was the case. Yes. Yeah. You know, although it's probably transferring down to kids now because
everything's been falling lower and lower.
Yeah, because children have unbelievable resiliency. I mean, it takes a lot to kill a child because they're just recover. That's biology. Biology wants to keep us alive, and they give extra superpowers to children.
Children but it's are also actually, the time that your whole potential in life is set. That first 1,000 days from conception to age two. That determines your real potential in life.
Yeah, it does. It's so crucial. And certainly human food is important, but in that window, it's there's a nutrient that we kind of know about. It's never really, at least as far in my review or under exposure to the literature, really emphasized, and that's love.
Nice.
You don't love your kids. It's not going to work.
It's called failure to thrive. If children are neglected heavily, they just die.
Yeah. But it's not just dying. They fail. Right. I mean, that's the most extreme example. But they don't evolve and mature into their maximum potential. It's impossible almost.
Right.
Yeah.
They need real loving attention of all kinds.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But that's a tangent. And I wanted to get back.
It's a profound center for how to be a human being. We worry so much about eating right. And yet, let's get the human family back together.
That's the key. And we're talking about authentic love, not just saying the words, but actions and behaviors. Unconditional love for kids. And fortunately, the problem is, the reality is that most parents have not been loved and they're handicapped. And it just gets this vicious cycle. So it's difficult to blame the parent for making a conscious choice when they don't really have the ability to do that.
You know, trauma is passed from generation to generation.
Yeah. Yeah. So anyway, let's divert him back to dicarboxylic acid. Why the heck would that harm human biology? So we get metabolic flexibility.
We've got a charge on it. It's super electromagnetic. Well,
I don't want to go to the physics. We know why it does.
Yeah.
But there's something, I believe there's something that's happened in biology.
Huh, like God.
Yeah. No, like what? Like God?
Like God. Well, God, what did God do when he put these two together?
Yeah. No, he knew what he was doing. And I'll tell, well, at least I believe. So let me extend the story. So we've got 97% at least of people who are metabolically inflexible. They are not healthy. And one of the this is a leap. So we established that as a fact. 97% of people are not making maximum cellular energy. One of the consequences of not having enough energy is that you cannot maintain a low oxygen gradient in the large intestine. Why is the hell is that important? Well, I believe, as and I'm a new convert to this, I kind of dismissed it for many years. And all of us in nutrition have heard that the human microbiome is crucial, it's critical, it's the most important. And I've come around to that realization belief, and I believe that's accurate. That if you don't have a healthy microbiome, it's almost impossibly healthy. It's almost impossibly
healthy. Who has a healthy microbiome?
Less than 97.1%, that's for sure. Actually, less than 3%. Because they don't create enough cellular energy and they can't exclude the oxygen from the large intestine. It's important to realize that 99%+ of the bacteria that live in your intestine, which is most of the bacteria in our body, is in the large intestine. It's a special place. And if there is a surplus, there's even a tiny amount of oxygen, you disrupt your whole biology there. And these microbes that were designed to be there when you were making enough cellular energy cannot exist. It's like physically impossible, because it's a simple thing. They're called obligate anaerobes. That means they absolutely they die when they expose a molecule of oxygen. It just doesn't work. They
it's
were never
they can exist at all, given the ubiquity of oxygen.
Well, the amazing thing is
that possible that they get into us and can live there,
because we can create cellular energy to create this absence of oxygen in our intestine. This is the key. I'm coming to a point. Believe this is not.
Where's the seed for all of that? Where are they coming from an anaerobic place?
Well, that is a good question. I have not thought about that, but. You know, I can understand how it would work, but it's
rocket ship from anaerobic land down in the soil.
No. I mean, ultimately if you trace it back, it came from the environment, right? Yeah. Cause I mean, we Earth started in an anaerobic environment. There was no oxygen on Earth. There was no oxygen. Molecules of oxygen did not exist. They're maybe embedded in some stone somewhere, but it wasn't in the air. It was zero until bacteria evolved to actually take fuel like carbohydrates and fats and use it and burn it in a way that creates carbon dioxide and oxygen and water.
Amazing.
Well, actually, it was the bacteria that did it. They did that in glycolysis. I think glycolysis makes oxygen, doesn't it? It uses,
pyruvate. Oxygen, I don't know.
I forget where oxygen is produced by the bacteria. It's chloroplast.
Sulfur.
Chloroplast. Plants produce oxygen. Yeah, that's what produced the oxygen. That created the food for the bacteria. I got it mixed up. Sorry.
Algae.
Right, the algae, plants. I think algae and phytoplankton are probably the largest producer of oxygen in the world, as I understand. It's trees do good, but it's mostly the phytoplankton.
That's why they often say the oceans are the lungs of the planet.
Right, because they're respiring, they're producing oxygen.
Yeah.
And so that, you know, shifted things and allowed bacteria to live and produce energy more efficiently, because it's like 18, 20 times more efficient to burn fuel with oxygen than without it.
Just blow a little air on your fire and you'll see that.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's what the bellows are for.
So we've got this environment where we have decreased cellular energy. As a result of that, there's this gradual shift of bacteria that occurs in your microbiome. Ideally, it should be mostly obligate anaerobes. But when you got the oxygen peeking through, then you get something called a facultative anaerobe, which means it can tolerate oxygen and survive. And the interesting thing is that the obligate anaerobes are almost universally considered beneficial bacteria. And although they have endotoxin, which is also called lipopolysaccharide, embedded in their cell walls, it doesn't appear to be that toxic. It's somehow immune buffered in some way, where it doesn't cause the issues which we referenced earlier. Endotoxin is a huge problem. So, but these facultative anaerobes that come in when there's not enough, when there's oxygen there, those guys, it's a little different story. They have the endotoxin that can damage you, and damage you indeed. And one of the problems when you don't have these obligate anaerobes, and the classic one would be acromantia. Have you heard about acromantia before?
Just vaguely, yeah.
Yeah, well, that's about right. And you're a pro in nutrition, and you know, and you finished your training long before acromantia was discovered. It was discovered in 2004.
Yeah, we didn't talk about bacteria really, even in integrative health until about 1999. Like we didn't, microbiome was just getting into vogue.
And that's largely, it was almost impossible to culture these things in a lab because as soon as it hits oxygen, it's dead. So the way these were discovered were through DNA sequencing.
Right.
That's how they figured it out.
The human and, microbiome, the whole...
Like, yeah. So anyway, one of the benefits of these species like Acromantia is they make mucin, which even if you have leaks or holes in your gut, sometimes called leaky gut, which is a huge problem because not only can the food molecules and proteins come in contributing to allergies and a whole variety of other complications, but also this endotoxin can seep through and just destroy your health. And in fact, in many people, they die from it. It causes septic shock. You know, it's a big, big problem. And a lot, if you look it up, it surprised me when I first encountered this, but a lot of people die every year from septic shock. And it's usually related to this, to the gut, because the gut is messed up. So anyway, I'm one of the obligate anaerobes other than Acromantia, which is probably the keystone species, is another one, which you've heard of before. It's called Oxalobacter, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the benefit of Oxalobacter is it digests oxalate crystals.
What it does is it tells the gut wall to excrete oxalate, to give it something to eat.
Yes, but it does digest it.
And that's in an excretion process coming out of the bloodstream.
Yeah, so it helps essentially lower your oxalate level.
That's already been absorbed, right?
Yeah, which is, yeah, absolutely, which is a big part of it.
Not from the absorptive sites, because of course you're absorbing your high eventually GI tract, you're absorbing your oxalate, and then the colon is attempting to help, and the Oxalobacter is there going, I'm here, give me some, it's my dinner.
Well, here's connecting the dots. So we're very close, which is the what I want to discuss with you. And I had to give you all that preface to ask this question. So my observation personally, a study N of one, is that my oxalate rash disappeared when I optimized my microbiome. Disappeared. I do not have an oxalate. I don't use it. I stopped using aloe months ago. No need for it. I would have, if it ever comes back, I'll try the calcium, but no need for it now because I don't have to. It's gone after 15 years. And my supposition is we can discuss if you're interested, some of the other things I've done to optimize my microbiome. I'm one of the, you know, there's probably less than one person in 100 who has an optimized microbiome. I'm close. It's almost to the point where you can use my stool as a fecal microbiome transplant. No, I'm serious. I mean, you laugh, but look, there's diseases like Clostridium difficile, as you well know, that kill people every day. As we're talking, people will die from this infection.
And it's become more of a problem.
Yes, it has because of the microbiome problems. And the traditional conventional treatment is to go on more antibiotics, which contributed to it to begin with. But but that works maybe 70% of the time. The other 30% of the time, you're dead. You are dead. And my old girlfriend had a relative, and I knew this like 10 years ago. And the guy had septic shock C. difficile infection. They wanted to do antibiotics. I said, no, they're going to kill him. Put him on the fecal microbiome transplant, which even now is still somewhat experimental, although many hospitals will do it.
It's more common now, yeah.
Yeah, it's more common. But back 10 years ago, it wasn't. And he didn't listen to me and he died. It was simple. So the success rate for FMT, fecal microbiome transplant, is close to 100%. Close to 100%. So why would you not do it?
That's what the experts say. I haven't heard that to be true among my clients, but.
Okay. Well, probably you need an ideal donor.
Yeah.
That would be the key thing. And I think I know how to identify that donor. They have to have a high concentration of obligate anaerobes in their microbiome.
That's
like Acromantia and others, because then those are the seeds. Now, unfortunately, I guess, until now, there is one company that makes, actually there's several companies. There's only one that really has a legitimate claim on making Acromantia, but it's not that good. It's almost worthless.
It's so actually tricky to package and.
Not just package, but to manufacture. It's a literal nightmare.
That requires would be super expensive.
Requires over $100 million just in equipment to be able to culture it and manufacture it and put it in a bottle.
And then the quality control, how do you do that?
No, but we are, Sally, getting close. There will be quality products on the market this year. We will be the first company to start selling them.
Wow.
We're looking at the leading producers in the world right now. We're going to work out deals with them because there's no question this is a life-saving. This is the seed that you need to reestablish it, assuming you're not continuing to damage your cellular energy production and you can maintain that oxygen gradient, because otherwise you're just going to continue the same process. But when you have the seed and you're doing that, the combination is miraculous, and then you can optimize that microbiome. Because once you get Akkermansia back, it sort of stops the competitive inhibition that contributed to the lack of other beneficial strains like Oxalobacter. But if you can optimize your microbiome, like I believe I did, and I did something, it's relatively experimental. We're actually in the process of developing IRBs, institutional review boards, to do the experiments and document safety for it. But is something like similar to rectal insufflation of ozone. Mm-hmm. Instead of ozone, we're using CO2.
Ah, right.
The precursor of oxalates. but it's the gas. It's not the crystal. It's the gas. But the CO2 is a highly beneficial nutrient for these obligate anaerobes, and it helps fertilize them and encourage their growth and inhibit the growth of the obligate or the facultative anaerobes, the pathogenic bacteria.
It's kind of like plants. They like
exactly very similar, CO2. Very similar. Yeah, yeah. You're thinking really sharply, despite the personal challenges you're going through. You're right on target. Yes. So that's the supposition. I think if you could somehow, and this is the answer to the question I posed initially, how on God's earth could something so magical as two carbon dioxide molecules be so dangerous and damaging? And I propose the answer to that question is that we aren't making enough cellular energy. We poisoned ourselves with our foods, not intentionally. This is just an artifact of living in the 21st century industrial age that has bastardized and perverted the production of food to the point where it is now toxic molecules that you're eating. And you have to be an extraordinarily motivated, nearly gifted human being to understand and navigate that pathway to find and identify and consume healthy food, because almost no one can do it. Literally, it's that hard. It's that hard because they've ruined the system. And I'm on a crusade to address that. But that,
and
anyway,
culturally, everybody's just going along to get along and not really standing.
That's right.
Up.
They don't get this like you and I do. And there's other people watching this who get it, but it's not an easy challenge. But once you do that, I think that is the answer that explains why this oxalic acid is a problem. Because oxalic acid is actually a supplement. It's food. It's fertilizer for the Oxalobacter, which is good bacteria. That's not bad bacteria. That's good. And if you
don't necessarily need exogenous sources when you've got a small production.
No. Oh, of course. No.
So
no.
That would spare the kidneys completely if you weren't
100%.
Eating very much. And the liver and the tissues are producing a slow level of oxalate to keep the Oxalobacter happy. You, then the kidneys have like made it in the shade. They've arrived in Miami Beach with nothing to do.
That's right. Yeah, you got it. That is a brilliant and contemporary illustration of exactly what I just suggested. So thank you for providing that. But do you agree with my supposition
that the oxalate in the system is helping maintain an appropriate microbiome?
Well, no. It's the absence of the ability to produce cellular energy to maintain that gradient, which causes the Oxalobacter to disappear in the first place, which causes the problems with oxalates.
Well, it's interesting because it just feels like this vicious cycle, because one of the major ways that oxalate itself is toxic is it's breaking down cellular production of ATP.
Yeah, absolutely.
It blocks the last step of glycolysis. It blocks complex 2. It causes all this oxidative stress and inflammation that messes up the mitochondria. It's messing up the membranes of the mitochondria in the cell. So this is one of its many mechanisms of harm. And then you have these, you know, redundant ways in which the energy production is being destroyed.
Yeah. It's a self-perpetuating cycle in the wrong direction.
Yeah. And unfortunately the body really tries hard to look like everything's fine. Like, so this can go on under the hood for decades.
It does.
And then suddenly in your late 30s or in your 40s, you suddenly feel old and broken.
Because you are. Because
you are. And you have been for 15, 20, 25 years. Yeah. And your body's just been playing nice. Because you have extra capacity in all these redundant systems, and the body's doing these metabolic backflips, so you are fine, so you can function, but you're not fine.
And I'm reminded of one of our initial conversations in our podcast or interview together, and you had expressed your observations that those who had engaged in a carnivore usually had problems, and that makes perfect sense. Exactly what you would predict, because the carnivore, by almost definition, you have low carbohydrates, so your cellular energy production goes down even further.
You can get more insulin resistance and
more, 100%.
You know, low glycogen, and it just really slowing down.
Your metabolic
rate is like,
yeah,
yeah.
Now you get it. You are enlightened for sure. You know, well, this.
You live stuff and you can see it. I mean, yeah. I started a full carnivore diet when all the carnivores started inviting me to interview, and I wanted to understand it from the inside. That's how I learned. Mm-hmm. And so that was April 1st of 2019. And you and I met later that year. Mm-hmm. And by the next year, I could see my waist thickening. That's not right. You know, and later that year, the muscle cramps at night, the inability to sleep at night, and just not feeling great. And that's that carb starvation that you talk about.
Yeah, with low carb, the brain only comprises 2% of the body weight, but consumes 20% of the energy. And it has to have glucose. You will be dead if you have no glucose. It just will be. That's just biology. I mean, in literally seconds, you'll go into a hypoglycemic coma, you'll be unconscious, and you'll die. Because your brain requires that. Does lactate help? Of course. Does ketones help? Of course they do. But you need some glucose. So if you're not eating it, you're going to have to make it. And if you run out of your glycogen, and you'll run out of your glycogen stores within a day or two, and then you have to rely on sacrificing your muscle in gluconeogenesis to make glucose, which is only facilitated by the stress hormones glucagon. Mm-hmm. Adrenaline and cortisol.
Yeah, not a
happy
which
is
life.
Not good. You don't want elevated levels of those, but they all do. If you stop eating carbohydrates or have radically lowered, you know, for most people, you need at least 150 grams a day of carbs. Anything less than that, you are activating stress hormones, because that is the basal that most people need. And some people need a lot more. I know. I'm about 500 grams a day, and I've gone up to 600 before. I don't know. Well, how many grams of carbs are you taking a day?
Oh, not enough. Because I'm allergic to the fruits now and all the grains, and it's hard for me to get enough.
Okay, so this is the issue. You know, you've heard of Pete before. Of course you have. Mm-hmm. Great Pete. Yeah. So there's that, you know, brilliant guy. I think he was really one of the most brilliant health educators of the last century, in my mind.
He's over everybody's head in a way where it doesn't always...
He was so far ahead of his time. He was so far ahead.
Yeah.
He was way ahead of his time. He's the first scientist, researcher, teacher that I know of that was discussing the dangers of excess omega-6 before anyone else. He led the field in that, and I missed it. I totally missed it. One of my big clinical mistakes is ignoring. I don't blame myself too much, because he had a speech impediment of sorts, and he didn't sound smart, and he was giving these controversial recommendations. Didn't make any sense, but he was right. He was right.
Well, so, same with oxalates. It doesn't make sense on basis of what you think you already know until you know more.
Yeah. Until you know more. It's a real deal. And most people, I'm telling you, unless you have an optimized microbiome, and almost everyone watching this does not, you're going to need to pay attention to this. And having low oxalate foods is a good thing. Once you get your microbiome fixed, I don't think it's an issue at all. I mean, I'm eating figs now. That's how confident I am it's not an issue for me. Figs are really high in oxalate,
aren't
they?
Not compared to spinach and almonds. They're pretty high, but you know, you can have a whole cup and you're still less than 30 milligrams of oxalate. And
I thought you could handle
200 or 300 milligrams of oxalate a day. The problem is that the really uber high ones, like the buckwheat and the spinach, a spinach smoothie is 1,000 or more.
Oh yeah, it's just
so that's
just
a whole different ballpark versus 60 milligrams from your cup of figs.
Yeah, I don't think you could ever make an argument to have an excess of more than 3 almonds a day, really. I mean,
well,
you're in a dangerous.
So many other problematic things. If you want a healthy gut, you don't want nuts kicking your gut over and over.
Yeah, and you know, I used to think macadamias were an exception in Sally. I don't think they are anymore. I don't think you should have macadamia nuts because oleic acid doesn't get a free pass.
Right.
It has its own problems. It's a MUFA, a mono.
These seeds from the trees are designed with all these multiple anti-nutrients to kick you in the gut. All the anti-nutrients are gut toxic. They're all causing some degree of gut damage. Yeah. And the nuts are just designed to be indigestible. They're designed to dismantle your ability to digest food.
Yeah. So, my new recommendation is no seeds, no nuts, none, zero, nada. Stay away from those creatures. Have real other foods.
You know,
one of my most favorite foods now is, and I think it might help you with your challenges.
Not butter?
Well, butter is definitely a good food, but I mean, you just have, I maybe have a teaspoon of butter a day, you know, 10 grams. That's about it.
You poor thing.
What? No, listen, you're looking at someone who had 4 ounces of butter a day in my keto days. I don't think that was healthy either, but you know, I have plenty of fat. I have about 30% fat. I'm not a fat phobic, but I get it mostly from food. I think one of the best possible molecules you can get in your body is the highest quality collagen you can get. Not as a supplement, as a food.
Pork skin? Fish skin? No. Fish skin is good.
Well, you would know this. This is going to be a real interesting dialogue because I rarely encounter a highly respected nutritionist like you. You're one of the most respected nutritionists I know.
Thank you.
You are. You've earned it. And you're very, very sharp. This is why I'm enjoying this conversation. Because most of the time you got to teach. I just avoid professionals that don't know what they're talking about. So I have to teach them on the podcast. That doesn't work. I like to learn in real time. And I always do with you. So collagen, you referenced, you can get many sources, any connective tissue, skin, is certainly one. Nails, cow hooves, feet, chicken feet, all sources of collagen. But I don't think they're the ideal form. And this is what I want to dialogue with you about. I think the ideal form is from a joint that has tendons and ligaments. And the biggest joint that I know of, yeah, you could do fingers.
That's fine.
But how about the knee joint? The knee joint of a cow, otherwise known as a knuckle bone. Mm-hmm. Have you seen those before?
Sure. I've been doing bone broth and
whole. Okay, good. This is
like
perfect.
Long veteran of like bones and chicken feet. And
So what is your, give me your experience of you and with bone broth creation and the different types.
Well, you know, usually I would say make sure there's wings and necks if you're doing chicken, right? You got to have all those small joints because there's
But you got to be careful about chicken.
No, I don't do chicken. But in the day, chicken was the first entry level. This is how you do a broth. Mm-hmm. Throw chicken in a pot, but add extra wings, extra necks, and get enough of that joint tissue. Yeah. And then, you know, you can do, plus it's a traditional food in China. Like chicken feet are a real delicacy because they're delicious. They're so yummy. And then, you know, so are pork hocks and pork feet. You know, that's a classic old thing. But you've got to have a joint that's got enough cartilage in it.
And do you know of a joint more than
the meniscus in the knee is the thickest layer of cartilage in the body, as far as I know. You've got discs, spinal discs, and meniscus. Those are the big, thick chunks of cartilage.
Yeah. So why wouldn't you get it from a cow? That's the biggest. Yeah. That's the biggest animal we consume.
Right. That's right.
Yeah. So I think that is the finest source of collagen, and as far as I know, you would know better, or probably better than anyone I personally know, other than the collagen researcher, that is not commercially available. You cannot buy a knee joint from a cow as a supplement. Do you agree?
Yeah, I don't know how they make the various
unless
beef.
You're
buying
it in bone broth.
Using. Yeah.
Unless you're buying a bone broth for someone who's making it from that tissue.
Right.
Yeah, that'd be the only way.
And the local farmers who are selling quarter cows and half cows, a lot of their customers don't want the bones. So you can get them.
Yeah. Well, that would be, Yes, if you're lucky and you believe me, if you find that person, you hit the jackpot, because that, in my view, that is one of the healthiest tissues you could consume, especially in the context of our discussion, because collagen is massively crucial for building the integrity of the endothelium of the gut. If you don't have collagen, you're going to get a leaky gut. You need sufficient collagen. You need sufficient
collagen.
It also
supports brain health too, I believe.
Brain health and bone health.
Of course.
You know, people are talking, you know, collagen, bones are one-third collagen. One-third collagen. And if you don't have enough of the raw material, how could you possibly have dense bones? Like, it physically is not possible.
The underlying matrix that makes up a bone is all that collagen.
It's all collagen. It's all collagen.
And you build with citric acid and other chelators, you connect all those minerals and you have a big strength.
Yeah, and even the muscles, you know, the lining of the muscle sarcomeres is collagen. It's all connected. And that collagen converts into tendons and your ligaments. You know, all tied together with collagen. It's one third of the protein in our body.
I'm not sure we totally understand the full metabolism of that. And
we don't. It's not known. It's a frontier of science that's not appreciated. Yeah. And I'm gonna push the limits.
Hydroxyproline is the one that tends to turn into oxalate in the body. And if you're eating a high oxalate diet,
wait, walk me through that, because how could that possibly be?
That's the only true endogenous production of oxalate in the body.
Okay, walk me through that.
Is hydroxyproline gets turned into oxalate?
How?
Glycine. Well, there's a whole enzymatic pathway, and not all of it. You know, probably 2% of the breakdown of connective tissue, 2% of the hydroxyproline in that is becoming oxalate.
So, is it catalyzing a reaction between CO2 molecules to bind them together, or is it a degradation product of the metabolism?
It's from the degradation, you know, breaking this down and trying to get rid of it. It turns into oxalate. I'd have to go back and see if they've characterized it well enough to really know. They know which enzymes are involved, you know, and so it's
hydroxyproline is a hydrophilic amino acid. And I've actually written a paper. It's not yet published on this.
John Knight is down at the University of Alabama at Birmingham, and he's the real expert in this. He's the one who's done the research on this and is saying—
For hydroxyproline and oxalates?
This production of oxalate is primarily hydroxyproline, some glycine, and that it takes about a scant tablespoon, about 7 grams of gelatin and collagen to see an elevation in oxalate in the urine.
Okay. Now I'm not disputing that is inaccurate. It probably
right,
is.
Right. But what does it mean in practice?
Mm-hmm.
I definitely see it in my clients. If they are doing collagen powders, their arthritis comes back and then they stop.
It's interesting. That is, I did not realize that. Thank you for that refinement.
So where do you kind of steer this ship? Like, what's an appropriate way to use these? And that's why, like, I'm quite happy that I eat sardines with skin on, because I know I'm getting the collagen, you know, and
you're not getting much with that.
It's quite a bit in skin.
Really?
If you ever cook fish, it's really sticky. It sticks to everything. The skin of fish is very collagenous, and it's
how many grams do you think you're getting?
Sort of gag layer. We can look it up, because I think it's significant.
Really? Okay.
And then, you know, pork belly with the skin on and making sure you're eating all that connective tissue that has the fat on the meat and those things, that you're getting some of that. But I, with like my fish, I have to butter the parchment paper and put a little stuff on the skin to get it off, to be able to transfer it to the plate, because it is so sticky with collagen.
I did not know that. That's good to know.
And so, I think another possible alternative, like, I have developed a beef allergy. No gelatin for me. So that's a nice to have that alternative where
you got compromised.
Using fish skin as like crispies, you know, salmon skin and so on.
I think I'm willing to share, but outside the RB, I might just introduce you to the protocol we have for the CO2 insufflation, because I think it's your gut that's the issue.
If you can get that gut back, the site of excretion of oxalate and the site of where all
you've got a gut problem, 100%,
100%, and yes, let's save the colon.
So I'll get you on CO2, and I'll get you the acromancy as soon as we get it. I still don't have samples. I've been waiting for samples of this for 3 months. There's only like 2 companies in the world that produce it, maybe more, but it's, you know, there's such a big capital investment that it really is a high barrier entry in this market.
Next level. Very exciting. Oh,
at absolutely next level. This is the ultimate probiotic. This is the only, there's the market, global market for this is $100 billion. And as soon as this is introduced, it'll take 70% of the market. There is no reason for another probiotic.
Wow.
Well, maybe.
Probiotics have performed poorly. A lot of people spend
not
a lot
Acromantia. Of money. In fact, the one company who's making it, they got FDA, they got approval to treat diabetes and obesity. FDA claim they can make on it because it worked. How does it work? Because it makes a substance called GLP-1, glucagon-like peptide 1. Right. That is the primary form of glucagon. And what is that? Does that sound familiar? Yeah, there's a GLP-1 analog or mimetic called Wegovy. Ozempic, that they're paying $1,000 a month for, that will kill them prematurely. Does it work? Absolutely. But it does it in a way that's like injecting insulin, you know? Same thing. You don't want to inject insulin. You want your body to make it.
That's for sure. And you want your cells to be functional enough to be able to read that insulin and know what to do about it.
Absolutely.
You know, if you've got a lot of acidity and stuff, the shape of those receptors, the last bonding is hydrogen and disulfide bonds. It requires the right pH and the right conditions for the those proteins to have the right shape and to work.
Yeah, for sure.
And so you're just making sure you're not so inflamed all the time that you're so acidic that those receptors are misshapen.
It's really a sad testimony to biology or the perversion of the, probably more of a sad testimony to the perversion of the food system, that someone who's as committed and knowledgeable to health as you still has these problems. That really is shocking. It is shocking.
Yeah.
And it's not disparaging in any way. It's just, you're
there's
perfect.
So many of
it's hard to be smarter. And, yeah.
Our whole generation of us in our 60s, there's a whole lot of us who've been devoted to the cause of alternative health and wellness for most of our lives. People I know who've been in the retail side of it, they've done everything right, but they didn't know about oxalates, for example. Yeah. It turned out that was the huge revelation that did not, you know, if they had known earlier, they'd still have their hips and their knees. But despite doing everything well, not knowing about the oxalate, again, same with this. Like, we don't understand biology like we think we do. We don't understand how the colon functions. We don't understand the integration of the whole body.
The reason we don't is because of this, the perversion of incentives.
Right.
Incentives now are based primarily on greed. Yeah, it's mercenary, absolutely mercenary, with no intention or desire to really, other than a few, I mean, we're talking well under 5%, maybe 1% of the companies who have any focus or care and attention on the consequence of their business on human health.
Well, even professors in academia, they have to justify their research saying, well, this insight's important because we'll get a drug out of this someday.
100%. Yeah, that's a perversion of incentives. There's no question.
Yeah.
But that's the reality.
Even years ago, I was reading about how raw milk defends itself and fights bacteria for 3 or 4 days and all this stuff. And when they write about it in the literature, they write, if only we could develop a drug that does what raw milk does.
You know, ultimately, it's really simple. Yeah, I mean, you even referenced this too, and I kind of find it offensive that the two terms for natural medicine, which I think is the most precise and most accurate, because it replicates nature's principles. That's not integrative medicine. That's bullshit. That's putting conventional medicine into natural medicine. And it's certainly not functional medicine. Those are two perverted terms that should never be used, in my view.
Right.
It should be natural medicine. That is the truth. We are replicating nature. We're copying it. We're trying to learn from it so we can apply those principles. And when we abide by those principles, biology responds. And it's, sort of a pet peeve I have.
Well,
humans
have lacked the humility to bow down to nature and say, nature, I long to understand you.
Yeah. I couldn't agree more. Yeah. Because that's where we learn. Exactly where we learn.
But we're refusing to do so.
Yeah.
We're so full of ourselves.
Yeah, it's hubris. It's hubris.
It's hubris. Yeah. It's the kind of hubris that has you run over a cliff by mistake. And that's what we're doing.
And people do it all the time. Yeah. But I think it's recoverable. And it's just exacerbated by the effectiveness of the programming and the propaganda and social media and everything that just insulates them from access to the truth. And the censorship doesn't help at all. The sources that do provide the truth are you know, you can't find them because they're not in the search engines anymore. So it's getting worse and worse, but it's not permanent. There is going to be a turnaround.
It's quite the adventure movie we're living in. There's a few heroes who are going to save the day.
Yeah.
Things are looking pretty dicey.
Yeah, I know, but I know the end. I've seen this movie and I know how it ends. I really have. I have. I live in the future.
I'm so glad.
And I happen to be one of those heroes that saves the day.
I know.
Yeah.
You are.
No question. And it's going to happen. And I'm beyond confident. And that's not hubris. That's
how nice to have hope in a world that's suffering for lack thereof.
Yeah. Well, the Calvary's on the way, folks. I can assure you. We got this under control. This is not a lost cause. And we're going to provide solutions very, very shortly. We've got lots of good news on the way. So just hang in there and try to do as best you can because help is coming. But this is part of it. And I really appreciate your refinement of this because I didn't appreciate that. The dangers, because collagen, in my view, in fact, I think the ideal food, I'm a big fan of starch now as opposed to fruit. What are you having for your carbs? Starch?
No.
What do you have for carbs?
Coconut water and ginger ale. I don't have.
How about fruit juice? Can you tolerate fruit juices?
I'm allergic to maybe everything but limes. That's what we have to fix. We have to fix the damaged immune system. When you have the damaged gut, you have this damaged immune system with all these oxalate crystals.
100%.
You ruin your ability to eat anything. So if you want a heroic project, let's get it so I can eat again.
I accept the challenge. And I'm hoping that by the end of this year, before the end of this year, maybe in the fall, I have you on again and we talk about your results.
Awesome.
Because by that time, we'll have our IRB. We'll collected the data to show the safety to support it, because otherwise, I can't get sued for this stuff. We have to do legitimate clinical trials, collect the data, and we're going to big. I mean, I'm collecting a lot of data. I'm collecting a database that's going to be extraordinary, that will be a game changer.
Well, I have some fans who would really love you to save the oxalate lady. So we're with you.
Yeah, I agree. Sally, if you're compliant and listen to what I have to share with you, it literally will be very easy. And a relatively small investment. I mean, it's not that expensive at all to do this. All right, we'll do it. We'll get you going. I accept the challenge. This is good.
It's really good.
Yeah. We're developing a system. I'm going back in clinical medicine again.
Yeah. Patients are lining up. It's your door.
Not going to see me. I'm creating a whole system of what I call MHCs, Mercola Health Coaches, that we're training.
Nice.
Yeah, for sure. Mm-hmm. There's going to be a lot of them. And I'm actually developing the training system right now, the educational system. So they essentially can reproduce exactly the protocols that are in my head and get people better. So that's in process. Probably will be in full impact this fall, because we still have to find the coaches, train them, and then develop, beta test that to make sure it works.
That's a lot, but congratulations on getting it this far.
Oh, you will be very pleased.
I'm good.
When you see this working. And we'll actually be inviting everyone watching this to apply for this position. There's very specific criteria and there's tests. We don't accept anyone, and maybe one out of four people will be accepted to the training program. And there's no charge for the training program. We just teach them, and it's a paid position, and you have to be able to see 10 people a week. Otherwise we can't train you. And there's our cost, because we got the best electronic medical system in the world from Athena. So we have to pay for that. Have you heard of Athena before?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Do you have experience with it?
No, not
yet, but it's a really good one. It really is good.
Oh, good.
I think it's the best. It's the most common, actually.
Right. It's a big one.
It's the big one. It's a big daddy of the whole industry. So
yeah,
we're really excited to be collaborating with them.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, it is fantastic. So anyway, I'm going to have to learn how to modulate this collagen, because this is a tangent. So you can't have starch. And this is exactly what Pete would predict. The Pete community, they were initially correct, but they didn't understand the subtleties, the nuance of the microbiome. And they assumed that everyone's microbiome was wrecked. And that's not true. truly healthy people have a good healthy microbiome, and they're a different animal. Starch becomes a health food. Once you have a healthy microbiome, starch is your best food. Probably the best one would be Japanese sweet potatoes. But rice works too. It doesn't have as many of the micronutrients, but it works really well. White rice, not brown. You don't want those anti-nutrients, as you referenced earlier. But when you have a healthy microbiome, that's the way to go. And so I think, assuming you have a healthy microbiome, rice or Japanese sweet potatoes and bone broth with some egg yolks from a low linoleic acid chickens, I think is the that's the ideal health food. That's my new definition.
Sweet potatoes are very high in soluble oxalate.
Yeah, but I said the premise here is you have a healthy microbiome. Yeah. And it just depends on
it's always about dose. So,
I don't know because I haven't played with it, but I'll bet you can go to maybe a gram a day. That would be my guess.
Gram of oxalate?
Yes. Which is a lot. I know you're cringing. Yeah. And maybe I'm wrong, but that's my guess. I could certainly be wrong. I have not done a study.
Well, the thing is, you just have to let everybody know, look, this is highly individual. Highly.
100%.
You can't just throw out like a gram a day and like that's the universal.
No. That would destroy almost everyone watching this. Only in a very
special situation with certain people, because there's all this variability. It's so amazing. Really a stunning museum exhibit in the literature looking at the primary hyperoxaluria patients, because every one of them presents differently and dies in a different state. The same disease, one person is dying with no bones left, they're just a puddle of pain in a wheelchair, and the other person's all their bones and teeth are fine. You know, completely different outcomes from the same illness. So there's all these factors like the microbiome and so many others that are uncharacterized, unconsidered, where it's just a big mystery.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, yeah, I get, you know, and I'm not suggesting that you could have a gram, 1,000 milligrams of oxalates from unhealthy foods. I would never recommend people eat out. We're in agreement. You shouldn't have seeds or nuts, period.
Yeah, right.
And I'm not a big fan of a lot of the high oxalate vegetables either, like rhubarb or spinach. Are those things? I think it's probably not a wise idea. Now, maybe if you cooked them really well, that would be okay. And especially if you're cooking them water, because oxalates are water soluble, they would go out anyway.
But so it'd just, be a lot. You know, when you get a certain level, taking it down by 20% is still meaningless. You know.
Okay.
Yeah.
But I'm not a big fan.
Boiling your broccoli is important because that makes a big difference. If you take that down by a third, it works great. So yeah, but heat doesn't touch it and all that. People are really confused about cooking. They think, regular people are so confused about this topic. They're just making up stuff like, oh, you didn't eat it raw. You should eat it raw. Oh, you didn't cook it. You know, it should be cooked. Like they don't understand. So
yeah, there's a lot of confusion. You know, you cook it in a pressure cooker. Oh, by the way, speaking of pressure cooker, I think that's the best way to create bone broth, because as you're familiar with, the most common recommendation is to cook it for 72 hours. Well, that's a nightmare. Who's going to do that?
I did it all the time.
Just on the counter. When I first encountered Natasha McCampbell or Campbell McBride's book, was that I wouldn't do it. It just takes too much time. So I abandoned it. But then I realized, once I got a pressure cooker, I cook in a pressure cooker. It's 4 hours.
It's a lot of heat. I'm always afraid of hot, really hot incinerating heat.
Yeah, but in a pressure cooker, it's safe as can be.
Because the heat is less hot?
No, it's contained in a pot. And it's got internal safeguards that prevent it from overheating.
Well, the whole point of pressure cooking is that you're cooking at a higher temperature. That's what you're doing. That's why it works.
Well, that's not true. Is you're cooking at the same temperature. You can't go above 212, the temperature of water, right? But it's the pressure, because there's two variables, temperature and pressure. It's the high pressure that does the magic. It's significantly, I don't know how many atmospheres of pressure it is, but it's a lot. I mean, you can't open up a lid on the pressure cooker. It will not open because there's so much pressure in there. So it's the combination of the pressure and the heat, and that heat is converted because, you know, the water is an interesting molecule. You know, there's four states of water. You know what those states are?
Liquid, gas, frozen, and there's an in-between state.
Yeah. You know what it is?
Is it between frozen and liquid? And between frozen and gas? Between gas and frozen?
I'll give you a hint. Think collagen. What would that state be? It's called
it's a gel.
Right. That's it. You got it. I knew you had it. It's gel water.
Gel water. Yeah.
That's the fourth phase of water.
Structure of water.
That's the fourth state of water. It's got a different molecular formula. Instead of H2O, it's H3O2.
Oh, yeah.
And it has a different chemical structure. It lines up structurally like a beehive. It's in hexagons. It has different physical characteristics, like a dozen different. So it's a distinctly different state of water.
We need to know more about water.
Well, we do only know a lot. And actually, I've got almost a Nobel Prize discovery about gel water and how it's created and how it's connected to collagen. I've kind of connected the dots together and because the range of structured water, the other term of it is structured water. And Pollack is one of the biggest researchers on it. And he identifies it as easy water, which means exclusion zone, which is a foolish mistake on his part. And I would tell it to his face because there's no reason to call it. He just created this name that doesn't mean anything. But it should be gel water. That's the most accurate way. That's what anyone can remember gel water. That's what it looks like. You see it. Is it gel? That's like, have you seen gelatin? That's, or jello? That's what it is. That's structured water.
That's interesting because really the matrix of living tissue is gel.
That's right.
It absolutely is.
And it's interesting because it's gel water. One of its physical characteristics is a storage of energy. You can create an electrical gradient. It's a battery. And it actually, you can, there's this trend, it's the way that you can convert sunlight to energy in your body is through gel water, structured water. And that gel, that I haven't figured out the specific details yet. I have to still do some more investigation on it. But somehow those hydrogen ions make it to the inner mitochondrial membrane.
Mm.
And they increase the electromotive force, which spins out complex 5 or ATP synthase and increases cellular energy production. And it does it through gel water. And the range of gel water in the body is like from 3 to 70%. When you're 3%, you're close to death.
3%?
3%. Some people believe you can still be alive at 3%.
Wow.
Ideally.
But it's be disintegrating electromagnetic, like how does the body communicate with it?
I know. You're close to death, as I said. But many ways, you would appreciate this analogy. It's very similar to glycogen. In what way? Well, glycogen is a storage of energy, right? It's glucose polymer.
Yeah.
And when you don't have enough and you have a surplus, you store the glucose as glycogen in your liver, but also your muscles. But your muscle glycogen does not go and support your brain. It's just used for your muscles. So similarly, when you have this surplus of energy introduction into the water, into your body, it's stored as gel water, which can last. I don't know how long it lasts because we don't have the technology to measure structured water in the body yet. I'll probably facilitate inventing that in the near future. But
Jim Ottman talks about, you know, the whole matrix of these hydrated, basically strings of amino acids, where this is where electrons and electron information is traveling through the whole body in one giant knowing matrix.
Well, that's a different setup.
But it's all embedded in this gel water as part of what keeps the whole matrices of the cells. And
that could be, yeah. Do you have any studies on that or references?
Timmons was the one who did a lot of that work initially. He's still around.
Okay, so we've got a barter. I'm going to facilitate the rehabilitation of your gut and you're going to give me that study.
I'll look through Jim's stuff. See if I can find it for you.
All right. Once you find it, I'll give you the protocol.
Oh dear. Now,
unconditional. No, it's not unconditional. No, I'm just kidding. But I'll still help you. But I would really like that paper.
Yeah,
because I haven't
Jim's
figured out that part.
Was really, it's not getting the respect it needs. But it's really important to understand this whole electromagnetic life.
Yeah, because
wholeness of an organism.
There is an electrical gradient in gel water, and it stores energy. That's how it's a battery.
That is so cool.
And that energy those hydrogen ions can be transferred into the mitochondria where they're used to create ATP. It's not a glycolysis. It's in the electron transport chain is where it happens.
Right.
Or specifically in the inner mitochondrial membrane, which, you know, complex 5. So that's an interesting tangent, not much related to it, but collagen is essential. I don't think you could be optimally healthy if you don't have collagen. It's, I think it's one of the reasons why most carnivore people do so poorly, because if you're like a Paul Saladino advocate who strongly advocates nose to tail, then you get away with it because you're eating collagen. There's no way to eat nose to tail unless you're eating collagen.
Right.
That's healthy. That's okay. That will work because 1/3 of your protein should be collagen. No doubt in my mind. And when you go below 1/3, you run into problems. You absolutely run into problems. Very serious problems. And sometimes you don't have a choice, like in your case. You know, you're kind of between a rock and a hard place because of compromised microbiome. And, you know, my guess is, you know, you'll be one of the first people I give the Acromantia samples to, just as a test. You probably only need 1 or 2 capsules, I think. You won't need many, but it's a seed. You know, the companies that measure this, the microbiome test, I'm actually purchasing some of the equipment because they're too expensive. They charge $500 for a test, and we're going to try to sell it for $50 because you only need to measure a few keystone species. But I've looked at their data, and 1 out of 3 people say we have undetectable levels of Acromantia, undetectable. And it's supposed to be 10% of your microbiome should be Acromantia, 10%. And it's down to 0. What do you think? That's just the extreme. There's, you know, how many people have like only 1%? I don't know.
How would any form of healthcare without this have any hope of real success?
It would have close to 0. You can't, because we both agreed upon it. The microbiome is probably the single most important target to optimize if you want to be healthy, because there's a lot more of them than us and they make all these beneficial things. You know, the ones that we know.
We can figure out what optimum is, but you're focusing on one key and fairly.
No. If you, the strategy here is to
that's the lever versus like worrying about hundreds.
Because if you can get those guys to grow, the other ones grow too. It's not just Acromantia. There's dozens of others. Right.
What do you call that pioneer species for everything else to work?
Yeah. Keystone.
Yeah, species. That's the word.
Yeah. So. And that's one of them. A keystone refers to like an arch, and there's like this one central place in the arch that supports it. And if you don't have that, the thing collapses. And Acromantia is like that. It really is the most important, but doesn't diminish the significance of the other supporting species. There's like Clostridium and many others, but Bifido.
There's always interactive and reductive because
we don't really have a clue what's going on.
What you're eating and what's the state of your physiology is constantly changing. And so that has to be
the thing, though. Because what you're eating, what you can't eat, because your biology won't let you, and what you can't eat is really the fuel you need to be optimally healthy. But you can't eat it because your microbiome is not balanced. It's not optimized. Yeah. So you're between a rock and a hard place, and you cannot get healthy, which is where you're at right now.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's exactly your position. And that's really shocking. So I'm personally looking forward to seeing you back to health this year.
I'm with you.
Yeah.
On that one.
Yeah, it should be really easy because you're doing almost everything else right. You know, so
yeah,
you're
perfect, and I'm feeling optimized. Better than I felt my entire adulthood.
Yeah.
And I'm finally able to tolerate weight training. Okay. I had all these bad tendons my whole life that wouldn't tolerate heavy weight training or that kind of thing. I can do that now. So many things are coming back.
Yeah. Good.
Yeah. It's great to be 18 again.
Yeah.
In a better time.
Well, I've actually turned the clock backwards. I think my biological age is below 30, and I'm 70 chronologically. So,
yeah.
So, I embrace and enjoy that. Actually gotten my body fat down to your levels or close to them. I think.
Yeah. So I mean, you know, the old joke about, you know, if you could just be young when you're old, you know, because when you're young, you're foolish. And now with 70 decades, there's so much wisdom to be had to really enjoy a healthy body.
You can authentically, sincerely, biologically turn back the clock.
You can.
Absolutely can.
Absolutely.
There's not a microdynamic. And I've done it. And I'm going to teach people how to do it.
Because you're designed for that. Your biology is reaching for the best of life every day. It's working towards
that. And it's impossible to get there unless you take extraordinary efforts, because there's so much propaganda and artifacts of institutions that are committed to greed that you cannot navigate the minefield. You just go one step here and you're blown up because you didn't understand what the damage to your biology is from what they did.
Well, meaning it comes through well-intended people.
Well, not all the time.
But, you know,
frequently
just
not.
Basically functional medicine guy who's living on IVs and using, blowing out your microbiome with heavy use of antibiotics to try to fix your gut. You know, that's a standard thing.
There are probably less than a handful of doctors in the country that I would trust to treat me. I mean, a handful. That is like less than five that I would trust. And I'm not saying there's more out there. There's that I know personally. And I know a lot of physicians, okay? I think most of them do not know what they're doing. And that may seem haughty and arrogant, but that's what I believe. And I'm entitled to that belief. And I'm not going to say, okay, I'm better than you. No, I'm offering to train these people and give them the protocol so they understand it. Because we need this information spread out there and identify what the landmines are that people are encountering. Now, they may have skills to navigate people through ICU that I don't, because that's not my forte and focus. And you know, to rescue people from the throes of death when they've been assaulted, you know, for decades because they haven't addressed the fundamental basics. So that's not my specialty at all. But I know how to, if a person still has, you know, a few months to live, we can reverse most diseases. And I don't care what the name is, because almost they're all derivatives of the same thing. You're just giving labels.
Cell energy.
Yeah, right. A loss of cellular energy production. You give the energy back and everything correct.
Everything can work.
Everything works. You get it. It's like such a pleasure to discuss with you. It's not like, it's fundamentally basic.
15,000 diagnoses.
Yes.
You don't need all
that. You don't need it. That's why, you know, I've designed that clinic intake form for we call them guests, but the people that we're going to take care of and help them resolve their illnesses. And it's like about 120 questions or so, but there's no, I mean, we get a list of what they've been diagnosed with, but there's no focus. We're not going to diagnose them with Lyme's or do this advanced microbiome test. Say, if you got, these 15 infections, no, it doesn't matter. We just have to give your body the basics and it self-corrects. I don't need to give you a label.
100%.
Yeah. That's it. That's it. And if you're not, if you know, there's not many physicians who will take that position. And
no.
I'm sure your experience will support
that. We dazzle them with diagnoses. We're proud of our ability to spew out Latin.
Because they were chained. They were brainwashed just like I was.
Yeah. That's how you know you're a fancy person, because you can spew out all these Latin names for things.
Yeah. Yeah. And not to disparage it, sometimes it's helpful because there can be symptomatic reliefs, but you know, it doesn't address the fundamental problems.
Right. Yeah.
So
it becomes more of a distraction.
All right. Well, I knew this was going to be a very delightful conversation. It has been. And some good things are going to come up. We're going to get you back and healthy again so that you can share this with other people, and you'll be one of the testimonials we can use for our program to inspire people and all the other people that you're taking care of, the thousands, tens of thousands. I don't know how many people you've impacted, but you've impacted a lot. You're a legend in the field, and you know, contributed greatly. And you've really studied, you know, your stuff really well. As I said, you're an anomaly. You know, many people have your knowledge and your common sense and your wisdom and have acquired. And I was hoping we wouldn't get into debate about this, and we weren't. It couldn't have been better, you know, because it's just a sharing of knowledge, this is the way professionals should dialogue, you know.
It's
just
a special day, and I feel like it's day one of something special.
Yeah, it is.
Thank you.
Yeah, so we'll get you back. When we last talked, I didn't know this. I'm learning continuously, you know, evolving my understanding.
We all
of biology.
Need to be. If we're not learning, then we don't know what we're doing.
Yeah. So, but it's cool. Once you get it, the beautiful thing about this, Sally, once you have enough cellular energy, there's another thing that kind of refers to the love, because you're actually able, once you have energy, you can evolve into your intuition and your gut feeling and connecting to this larger source and wealth of knowledge, which is outside your mind.
Right. I think intuition lands very well in us mature people.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's the benefit of that. All right. We should probably say the names of your book and your website and everything, because we haven't even done that. I mean, you are the resource for oxalates, and you know, we didn't hardly talk about them. I mean, you shared your bits of wisdom, and but I just wanted to go to a different area today.
That's really refreshing for me, because, you know, saying the same stuff over and over again.
Yeah, yeah.
They can hear me in 200 other places about oxalates, so we don't have to repeat it here. There's lots of free stuff on my website, which is sallykorton.com. And I
K is important. K is important. Not with a period, and you won't get there.
Not with a period. Right. Sally K. Norton. When I was looking for the URL, Sally Norton was taken. So K's matters a lot to find the right person, because Sally Norton is like Joe Smith. It's not an unusual name. But, you know, this, I have condensed down gobs and gods of science and made it as simple as I could, but as complete as I could. So if you have clinical thinking in your head, if you have any knowledge about health, you can really get a deeper value out of this. But people read this in 2 days, and then, you know, there's a lot more coming. But having, if people who want more data and more understanding, the misunderstanding, the misapplication of data, people think like there's one number for something and the one we have is exactly it, and it has something to do with the one you just bought and put on your plate. No. So we try to explain wiser thinking about how to use data in here too, up your data intelligence quotient.
Yeah, there you go.
And there's and then, a little YouTube channel if people want to hear stories from people and go on and have little bits of video.
What's the YouTube channel?
It's Sally K. Norton.
Okay, good. Perfect.
Yeah.
And the backstory of your book is you invited me to write the foreword to your book. And but before I got to write it, then your publisher said, oh, no. That's the number one spreader of COVID misinformation. He cannot be in this book. He's out.
Controversial topics need to march alone.
But did you invite me to write it for the next book? I can't remember.
Yeah, well, you were already recognizing the value of this so much. You were like, I would write a book if I could, but you need to write the book and let me do your foreword. Your normal enthusiastic self when you recognize important topics.
I'm an early adopter for sure in most things.
Well, I'm glad I was there to catch your enthusiasm.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, you're doing a good service. So, because most people watching this will benefit from the material, because until you optimize your microbiome, you have to pay. Well, you would benefit from paying attention to oxalates because going to suffer otherwise. You would definitely suffer.
If you want to be fertile and not mess up your sperm, you got to watch this. If you want to have healthy children and not have crabby, intolerant children who can't learn or are full of cradle cap and stuff, you shouldn't be poisoning them with too many sweet potatoes and the almonds and peanut butter and potatoes.
Yeah. Potatoes can be healthy and you can have them once your microbiome is fixed. Not before then.
That'd be interesting, because that's a whole nother subject we probably shouldn't even bite on, but
yeah.
There's whole populations that seem to not tolerate the alkaloids and things in potatoes. You know, a lot of the natives, North American natives, don't.
Interesting. Yeah. But topic for another discussion, because one of the things you can trust, if healthy indigenous people that have not been exposed to in what I call not Western diet, but more accurately is industrialized food.
Right.
You know, if they're basically eating indigenous food that's been prepared the way their ancient ancestors did, and they have a problem with the food, I would pay attention to that. I would definitely pay serious attention to that, because there's probably something that's impacting biology adversely on that.
Mm-hmm.
That is something I would trust for sure. I wouldn't ignore. Would not ignore. A lot of things I ignore, but that would not be one of them. Okay. All right. It's been a pleasure. And
very much so.
We'll connect and get you optimized again.
Wow. Appreciate that.